Urban Farmers. My name is Jim.
And I'm Joel.
It's been quite a while since our last audio diary. There's been a number of reasons for that. Number one, work.
Yeah, we've all got to do it, and it takes up a lot of time.
Yeah, in my particular case, for those who listen to previous podcasts, you know, I work in a corporate environment, but I actually manage a territory. And previously I used to look after the north of Brisbane up to about Mackay area. But in the past couple of months, that territory was expanded to include all out to Cairns. So quite a big territory for one person to cover. And it's taken a lot of time to get into a routine.
Yeah, it's a big area.
Yeah. And Joel, you've had some interesting things happen with your work as well.
Yeah, I've been busy at work, and I've also looked at going down a bit of a different path, and I'm doing a course at university as well now, so yeah, spare time is
limited.
Well, what is that? Let's be honest, I'm not really sure what that is.
Yeah, but nevertheless, we've continued with our path. I mean, it's one thing to be busy at work, but then it's another to include your daily activities around the garden, looking after what livestock you have, continually advancing what it is you do to move towards that more of a self-sufficient lifestyle. Throw all that together and then try to have the time to, you know, update websites and record.
Yeah, that's the difficulty. And I suppose that's the important thing to get to say here is that, yeah, we haven't done an audio diary for quite some time, but we've both still been really active and busy in the garden and and around the yard, and there's lots to report on both fronts. So
absolutely, and I think too, now that I've gotten into a bit more of a routine, and hopefully with your transition that's going on at you at the moment, you'll get more of a routine as well. But we will be able to update and share a lot more than we have in the last couple of months, where it's been a little bit more quiet. But to I guess bring everyone up to speed. Why don't you kick us off, Joel? What's happening in your garden? What's happened since the last audio diary?
Well, I built a new garden at home. Just I basically used some pavers that I had to do just a pretty rustic sort of garden edging, and I got in a big trailer load of mushroom compost.
Yep.
And I turned that in with the existing soil that I already had in. Just in the yard, which looked pretty good in its own right.
Yeah, it was. It's nice and crumbly, which is a good vegetable soil.
It just looked quite good. So, yeah, and I mean, that mushroom compost, geez, it really looks the goods. And I sort of said to the bloke when I got it that it was for a veggie garden, and he basically said, you know, mix this in, you know, turn it in with your soil and put your veggies in. And he said, then stand back because they'll jump out of the ground and, you know, really. I had some seedlings and bits and pieces in pots that had sort of been neglected a bit. Yeah, they were sort of just marking time, and I whacked them in the ground, and he was right. You know, it really, they just took off. So, yeah, it's really good gear, and I'm getting good results with the few bits and pieces that I've put in the ground there.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And I guess for me, I had my gardens, you know, at the last audio diary, they were already complete and I'd got some stuff in there. Some things did really, really well and some things I'm still learning.
Yeah, I think we always continue to learn. But, yeah, let's hear what worked and what needs work.
Okay. Basically, the cabbages are doing really well. So they've headed up now. They're just about ready to pick. They are staggered because I did, you know, stagger them in when I planted them. But the more mature ones are just about ready to pick, and the other ones probably a week or two after that.
No, that's good.
So they've been really good, but it's been a constant battle to keep them protected from the white cabbage moth and their caterpillars.
They're relentless, those moths. I get them in my my patch as well.
And yeah, it's just constant. They're always there. I'm up on my balcony. I look down there, and I just see them constantly down there. And this season, or this during the winter period, I was adamant that I wasn't going to use any chemicals whatsoever. And to that point, actually, no organic chemicals either, because they well, whilst they're organic and they're a lot better for the environment, a lot better for us, they do kill the good bugs as well.
Yeah, that's the hard part, isn't it?
Yeah, so I experimented with some good bugs that predate on the caterpillars.
Yeah.
And probably the thing I learned from that was I should have kicked it off. I should have really preempted it and gotten onto it earlier, because whilst that did work to a degree, I still have to go out there and pick some of the bigger grubs off because I use the green lacewing, which is a natural predator for the caterpillar. Whilst they are a natural predator, it's only on the small ones. So once they're of a certain age, if they're not eaten by the green lacewing, then it's over. They're too big for the green lacewing to attack. So
okay, yeah.
But nevertheless, you know, going down there and picking them off and feeding them to the chooks and letting the green lacewings take care of the small ones did work quite well in the end.
Yeah.
But a lot of damage was done to the plants in the beginning.
It's incredible the amount of damage that they can do, isn't it? And they seem to, in my patch, one or two in particular seem to really be their favourite and really got hammered.
Yeah, it's... I noticed that as well. The cabbages I have in a separate bed got smashed a lot worse than the others, but you know, it's one of those things. It got to the point where I was just, I almost pulled my hair out and thought, you know what, I'm just going to spray them with some organic spray.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I persisted through, and it's been quite good in the end. So happy with that.
It can be quite disheartening to have a good crop come along that you've nurtured from. From a seed to a seedling to a plant, and it's just starting to show some potential, and then it just gets inundated. It can be soul destroying, clearly.
Yeah, particularly with me, you know, as I mentioned, that my territory has expanded somewhat, and Queensland being such a big state, I actually spend, you know, up to a week away at a time, and at the moment, I'm spending every second week in regional Queensland.
Yeah.
So when I'm away for a week and I can't, you know, pick the little buggers off during that week, they, you know, when the cat's away, the mice play.
Yeah, indeed. And I suppose, interesting, another thing that you'll have to put some thought into is knowing that that's your schedule coming into the hotter months of how you'll keep water up to them in that time, because in the summer they're not going to like going without a drink for a week at a time either.
Well, that's true, yeah. So, again, yeah, water is a big one, particularly in here in Queensland. So
it's already warming up. It's just a couple of days into spring and it's... I think it's fair to say it's warming up.
Yeah, it's pretty hot.
Yeah, substantially so far. And we're in for a pretty warm summer.
Yeah, well, look, I'll tackle that at the time. I'll get some drip hoses in there at the moment, maybe putting them on a timer or something like that. Or maybe looking at a gravity-fed system from the rain barrels.
Oh, yeah, that's a good plan.
Yeah, so there's a few things. I mean, the other thing is I can always get somebody to water them for me.
Yeah.
I suppose with somebody who's not tending to the garden as avidly as we are, they can at least see if something's looking limp and wiltery. So then, you know, it'll prompt them to water it. But
and it's an easier thing to ask someone to stand there with a hose or turn a sprinkler on for a bit than to
bend their back looking for little bugs.
Yeah, which I might add, some of those green caterpillars are pretty hard to find. You got to sort of train your eye to pick them because they're virtually the exact same colour as your plant.
Yeah, yeah, it's difficult. Although your little boy was pretty good at picking them out that day.
So. Yeah, he had a keen eye for them. The chooks appreciated it too.
I think the chooks are trained now. Whenever they see me go near the garden, they all hover around the fence there. So, yeah. Look, the cabbage in the end did pretty well, but there's some failures.
Well, what didn't do so well?
Okay. One, and this partly comes down to the fact, I'm not going to blame it all on the fact that I was away a lot, because I really should have taken care of this, but my snow peas.
Okay.
So they were really healthy, very strong.
They were looking brilliant, actually, yeah.
The problem that I had with them was that I didn't thin them out enough whilst they were growing, and they became very top-heavy and entangled, and therefore there was a lot of... The entanglement basically limited the airflow, so with that lack of airflow, then they became subject to an attack of fungal infection, basically.
Okay. It's always a hard thing to do, thinning out a crop, I think. Like, things are coming up, you just don't want to be pulling bits of it out, but sometimes that is what needs to happen, I suppose.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, what ended up happening was they grew to the top of the trellis. They thickened out while I was away. There was a big, big growth spurt. And when I came back, actually, some of the vines towards the bottom started to die off a bit, but the top was still nice and healthy and green.
Oh, right.
So it was hard for me to sort of say, oh, well, I'm just going to chop all this top off that's overgrown when the underneath is looking quite bad and drying up.
Yeah, when the top bit was the good bit. Yeah.
So, I mean, in hindsight, I probably should have just done it anyway, but I sort of said to myself, well, given the time that I've got and it's almost done is done, maybe I'll just get a couple of crops off of it and then pull them out. And that's what I ended up doing. So,
and it's all a learning experience. I mean, this is what we've both said since the beginning. We don't claim to be experts. We're giving it a go and we're learning on the way. So I guess you'll have a bit better prepared for...
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean,
season.
It's all pulled out now and I've got some pea straw compost out of it, but I am going to replant in the same spot and just be a lot more keen to making sure I treat them right in that growing process and making sure they're not overcrowded. And you know, that's the thing, you know, it takes sometimes with some plants it takes a couple of seasons. Sometimes absolutely. You may never get it right too. I mean,
yeah, some things you put in the ground and they just flourish. Excuse me. And other things you seem to put heaps of time and effort in and you can never really seem to perfect it, so...
Yeah, and that's it. And sometimes you just got to think, well, maybe it's that particular plant's not for me, you know. My uncle, who, you know, he's getting on a bit now, but he's always grown his own vegetables. I've never known him not to. And when I was having problems with my zucchinis last season, remember when they weren't pollinated, there's no bees to pollinate them, and therefore there's not growing any fruit... I called him and asked him about advice on that, and he basically just said to me, is it worth it? You know, the amount of time and effort you're putting into that, you could put a more productive crop in that's easier for you to grow, better for the conditions that you have at your particular spot. Therefore, you know, it's a much better, more productive crop.
Yeah, and that's a valid point in that you might be putting a heap of time and effort into something, but it's just, it's not... particularly suited to your soil type or your climate or a host of things, or you know, and you are just really whistling in the wind when maybe you could just be putting something in that is
absolutely more productive. So to that point, I guess this is where the community comes into it, or friends and family who might be interested in this as well. So, I mean, if we come up to that situation where, let's say, for instance, you don't have the right soil to grow carrots, but I've got, you know, a wonderful carrot crop out there, which is another one of my successes. Well, maybe I concentrate on growing a few more carrots. And maybe if you've got better soil for strawberries, you grow a few extra strawberries and then we share crops. So I give you some carrots, you give me some strawberries.
It's a great way of doing it. Yeah, it's a great way.
And then I guess with more friends and family and people that you connect with that are doing that, then the more variety you're going to get in your vegetables. And maybe you just need to concentrate a little bit. And that sort of brings in that community aspect in it as well.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing.
Mm. So I mentioned my carrots doing really well, so they're bunching up fairly well. Another really good success of mine and something I'm really proud of is my fennel.
Yeah, it's looking excellent.
Yeah, and it's quite an abundant crop, and it is one of the ones where once I noticed some crowding from, you know, the smaller seedlings coming through, that I did get in there and thin them out, spend a lot of time on it. So, you know, whilst there was crops that was neglected somewhat just due to my time management, some of them I got in there and had a good go at, and they're paying results from that too.
Paying dividends.
My onions are slow growing. They're just not really, but they're healthy little plants. They're just not growing very quickly.
Are they more suited to the warmer weather, or has it been a bit cool for them through the winter?
Well, no, usually it shouldn't have been.
Okay.
Although this season, I thought it wasn't really that cold this winter, but then other people I've spoken to have said that this winter's been particularly cold. So I don't know.
I think it's been cooler than the couple before. Okay. Well, the couple previous years before that, I think.
Well, maybe I've just got more warm blood this year.
Maybe. It's hard to tell. I mean, really, Queensland winter's...
a few weeks anyway.
Yeah, it's not much of winter.
Yeah. My brown onions didn't come up at all though.
Okay.
So now it's not the first time out of this batch. So the place where I get my seeds from have been very, very good. But I think just it was a bad batch.
Oh, yeah, that can happen.
Nevertheless, I put some beetroot in there and they've propped up and they're going pretty well. So
yes, I've had some success with beetroot.
My potatoes didn't do too well in the bags.
The potatoes. They always look good.
Yeah.
On top.
Yeah. My issue was definitely water. I couldn't get enough water into them. Just being away, they would just dry out. And the plants, I mean, I grew a few potatoes. I got a few Kipflers and got a couple of Desiree potatoes. But they weren't very big and there wasn't very many of them. And it simply came down to the fact that I didn't have enough time to actually tend to them. So
yeah, I suppose being in a bag too, that they dry out a bit quicker than being in the ground where there's, you know, more moisture retention.
Yeah, it really was just down to time. I just you know, spending a week away and then coming back and watering for them, you know, making sure they've got water for that week, and then being away, there's, you know, a time there I was away for 2 weeks. You know, it's a long period of time as it was warming up and the plants just struggled a bit. So I put that in the middle category. Some success, but not as good as I'd like.
A work in process.
How's your broccoli?
Broccoli's gone really well. Yeah, it has gone really well. Saying that, put in two different varieties of broccoli. The standard green version. I don't know what its scientific name is, but
broccoli.
Yeah, that one. So that's done really well.
Yep.
I also planted a purple.
Yep.
The purple sprouting broccoli. So I did 6 plants of the standard green broccoli, and then 3 of the others. They've all grown to the same size, the plants, and all the standard green ones have flowered and headed up nicely.
Yeah,
but even though the purple ones are the same size, none of them have started to flower to head. So I did get my broccoli into the ground later than I wanted to, because I couldn't get hold of my mushroom compost for a while. And it sort of set me back about a month, and I didn't want to plant anything until I'd got that turned into the soil. Yeah. So everything had sort of got put on the back burner a bit, and I think I got them in the ground a little bit late. So
it could be that the purple ones are more suited to the... Well, I guess less resilient to the heat, maybe.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the plant itself has grown really nicely, but it just hasn't flowered. So, yeah, maybe the weather's been a bit too warm for it.
Yeah.
I'll leave them in for a bit longer and, you know, see what they do. And if it doesn't do much, then, you know, I'll just get rid of it. And we've got a good crop off the other sticks. Yeah. So.
Well, that's good. I mean, my cauliflower, similar plant, obviously. One headed up quite nicely, but the rest of them, again, just popped them in a bit too late and it became too warm too quickly. And they just bolted to seed without actually forming a head as such.
Yeah, okay.
So I've left them in because, you know, I might as well learn something and saving the seed from them, you know, should prove to be an interesting exercise. And if I learn from that, at least it wasn't, you know,
all in vain.
Exactly. So, you know.
No, that's right. And these are the things that we are learning on the way. And if you can get the seeds out of it, then not all is lost.
Yep.
You know, you can give it a grow next year, get them in the ground a bit earlier and know what to watch for. So.
Yeah, again, you know, so. I think, this time around I'm going to be a lot more in tune with the season. Part of this whole learning thing is understanding that, you know, right, it's probably need to be a little more proactive and knowing that, okay, I've got to react to the season before it hits, whereas...
Yeah, being a bit prepared for what's coming up.
Yeah, whereas I think this, particularly with this winter, I almost waited until it was starting to get cool before I started to prepare for my winter veg.
So. Yeah, sure. Yep. The other thing that I've had particularly do well in my little garden is beetroot.
Mm-hmm.
I had some really tiny sort of seedlings. They were only really small ones.
Yeah.
And they looked to be almost dead when I put them in because they were in such small trays. They were drying out. They virtually needed a bit of water every day and they weren't getting it because we were busy and they were getting forgotten. But we put them in the ground, and they were so wilted and fallen over. I thought, well, they're probably not going to do anything, but I'll give it a go. And they just sprung to life, and they've just looked. They just look fantastic.
They've flourished.
Yeah, we've used some of the leaves in salads so far.
Oh, excellent!
Yeah. And we've just they've all bulbed up beautifully. So we're going to have a good amount of beetroot there, and it's basically been something that we've just had to put in the ground. They've had a quick hose every now and again. Nothing else has been sprayed or put on them, and they haven't been touched by any pests or anything so far, touch wood. So, yeah, they look great.
Yeah, I must say that my beetroot was something that did very, very well last season. And, you know, I had a similar experience that, you know, it was just very, very easy to grow and, you know, and so nice just roasting them. And
I love beetroot. That roast of beetroot, excuse me, that you did that night was fantastic. And I also really like it pickled, you know, like the preserved beetroot on a sandwich, on a salad sandwich. It makes a salad sandwich for me. And
yeah, I'm more of a fresh beetroot. I'm not a big fan of the pickled stuff.
Oh, but I love it.
But I got to say, there's nothing quite like eating your own fresh beetroot straight out of the ground. It's just, it's so much sweeter and fresh and just beautiful. So,
and using the leaves in a salad, it adds really nice colour in the salad, and they're really nice.
Yeah, okay. I've tried it before, but I didn't do it with my last crop of beetroot. I just ate the bulbs. But
that was good.
All right. Well, all things being said and done, that's what's really happened in the gardens at the moment. What's your next plans, though, moving into the summer? What do you got?
Well, the broccoli and the cabbage and cauliflower will all sort of come out. So I really want to concentrate on getting some tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't actually looked. What I'm going to do, like we were saying before, is look at the list of what's best suited to this season rather than just stuff that I, off the top of my head, that I'd like to cook or grow. I'll see what's going to be suited to the season's best. But I think tomato is one thing that is definitely a good time of year, and that's probably one of my favourite things to have fresh, a beautiful fresh tomato.
Yeah.
Often the ones in the supermarket are just...
Well, they're not even tomatoes. They're just round red water holders.
Yeah, just insipid. But you get a nice, fine, ripened tomato, it's absolutely beautiful. So, yeah, that's high on my list of priorities is that. And I think I'll probably do a second crop of beetroot because those other ones just grew so well.
Mm.
And we do enjoy quite a bit of beetroot at my house. Yeah,
So I'm in the same boat. So I've got my three raised beds, which people can have a look in the videos. We did a video on how to build the beds. And they're currently occupied, although once I take the seeds from the cauliflower and harvest the cabbage, I'll have a bed freed up there, but the carrots and the beetroot and the onion will continue. I'm going to replant the snow peas again, because they're fine all year round.
Well, that's something I'll definitely want to get in the ground too then.
Yeah. And the fennel, obviously, I'll go through that as it's needed. But I've got another garden bed, which I'm currently preparing.
Okay, cool.
So it gets quite a decent amount of sun. So I'm going to lay that out, and one of the things that I'm definitely kicking off, and I've already planted some seeds of, is tomatoes as well.
Yeah.
So tomatoes is actually one of the first things I ever tried to grow myself, back in year 10 school.
Okay.
Funnily enough, I made a hydroponics kit when I was in year 10 for a school project.
Actually, I remember it. Yeah, you made out a 100mm PVC.
That's right, yep.
Yeah.
And I used a windscreen wiper pump.
Yeah.
As a...
to pump, and you grow it in that fluid. Perlite clay or whatever it's called.
Yeah, that's right, yep. And just a car battery to run the pump.
Cool.
Pretty basic system, but it worked well and produced some pretty good plants, and here I am. And I've always grown it. My father likes to grow some tomatoes every now and then as well, so
yeah, it's a great thing to grow.
Yeah. Now the difference with this year on previous years is the variety though that I've gone with.
Okay.
So usually I'd do something just like a Roma tomato and a beefsteak, something like that. This year I have gone with, and I'll see if I remember it, because my lack of preparation, I didn't write them down, but I've gone with a Brandywine.
Yeah.
I've gone with a cherry tomato.
Okay.
I've got, I think it's called the Moneymaker Roma.
Okay.
It's either Moneymaker or Honeymaker. I can't remember. I've also gone with a, what do they call it? The Ox. Ox.
Oh, there is an ox something or other.
I can't remember. I'm hoping it's a big, big, big red tomato. And then, interestingly enough, something I've never done before and have never had before, another great reason to grow your own fruit and vegetables because you can't get these in the store or not anywhere I've found, yellow tomatoes.
Okay, yeah. Mm.
So, six varieties?
I've tried some in the UK. Sun Gold, I think, were the ones I tried.
Yeah, I think the Sun Golds are small.
They are. They're like almost like a cherry tomato.
Yeah, I think these are a larger
one. Cool. I'll be interested to see how they go.
Well, yes. So will I, actually. Considering the fact that I don't really know what they look like.
Yeah.
Other than the yellow. But I think they're a bit larger than the Sun Golds, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, giving that a go. And I'm going to do a combination of planting them straight in the ground. And then also a trick where I take a soft drink bottle, 2 litre soft drink bottle.
Yep.
Cut the bottom off and invert it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually put the plant so that it's growing out of the neck of the bottle.
Yeah.
Fill it with soil and hang the bottles upside down so the plant's actually hanging rather than trying to grow it up a trellis.
Okay. Mm. Wow.
So the idea with that is that it keeps the fruit out of the mud and everything and you don't need to grow it up a trellis and it's just hanging down.
Interesting.
Mm. So I might take some photos and maybe do a little how-to and post it on the website.
And do you think that will work for the bigger fruiting varieties of the tomato as well as the small, the lighter one? Like,
yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, well, supposedly it does, yeah. I mean, I've seen photos of people doing it and obviously I read a how-to.
Yeah.
On how to make them, and yeah, they seem to work fine. So.
No, that's good. Actually, you mentioned cherry tomatoes before as one that you've planted. We've got some cherry tomatoes growing at our place that have just sprung up. They're sort of growing right up on the fence line of my place and the neighbour's place.
Mm.
So half the bush is on his side, and then the other half is sort of tangled in between our fence and my son's cubby house.
Okay.
But there's been some absolutely beautiful little cherry tomatoes. We actually had quite a few of them for dinner tonight.
Oh, excellent.
On burritos, yeah, they were magic. So, yeah.
So does your neighbour pick them as well?
No, he doesn't. They just seem to fall on the ground, but, well, yeah.
Might have to lean over and take his share as well.
Well, yes, I've contemplated it. It seems a shame when you see these beautiful ones nice and ripe, and then a few days later they're just
bird-feed
on the ground, but I suppose they'll continue to reseed over on his side.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, tomatoes just, they do that. I mean, one of the posts we have on our website shows just how easy tomatoes can grow. My brother threw one out of the back of the kitchen at his work and started growing out of the gutter.
So yeah, it's incredible.
I wish all vegetables was that easy to grow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, this is the thing, isn't it? This plant's never got any TLC from anyone and it's just growing there. It doesn't get water, doesn't get anything except for through rain, and it's producing beautiful fruit. And on the other hand, there's certain plants that we seem to be putting a lot of time and energy into that don't seem to be doing much at all.
Yeah, maybe we're putting too much time and energy into it.
Possibly.
Although, with my luck, that's not the case, considering some of my plants have not done very well through lack of support from me. But anyway. All right, well, all good things, and we'll keep people posted on what we're doing throughout, hopefully a little more frequently than we have done. But I think for the second half of this, I wanted to touch on a few things. Whilst we've been sharing what we're doing, we haven't really spoken too much about what people might want to consider doing or in any logical order of what they might want to consider if they want to take on this sort of lifestyle themselves. And we were contacted by one of our listeners or followers from our website, through our website email. Her name was Colleen. And she was asking about this sort of lifestyle. And I messaged her back and said, well, you know, we can provide a bit of information about, you know, what we would consider to be the right sort of steps in moving towards this sort of lifestyle.
Yeah.
So the first thing I thought, the most important thing is information.
Yeah.
To start with. And I gather a lot of this information. There's a lot out there on the internet and such, but I think something that's quite good and something that I personally prefer is actually books.
Okay.
So I thought rather than getting too complex, there's a few books in particular that have quite a lot of good information. So I thought we'd let people know, not to so much promote these books, but just to let people know what I've gathered a lot of good information from. And the first one, which has been around for some time, in fact, I've got two versions of it, is the Self-Sufficiency Manual. Now, the first one was actually written or published by someone by the name of Sally Gordon, okay? And then later on, issued through another publishing house, who obviously owned the rights to the original book. This is a second copy. So the Self-Sufficiency Manual, A Complete and Practical Guide to Living Off the Land, and this one's by Alison Candlin. It's the Australian New Zealand edition, so it is relevant regarding seasons and that too.
And that's one of the biggest things is finding the information. That's, excuse me, where you've mentioned you prefer looking at a book over the internet, because a lot of the time when we search on the internet, we're getting stuff from Europe or the USA, and it's just completely irrelevant. Oh, I mean, there's parts of it that you can convert and base it on, but to have something closer to home is a lot easier to work to, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, look, this book covers all the basics of self-sufficiency, which we'll run through what some of those basics are. But there's also a couple of other books, and another one that's an Australian publication, which I thought was quite good because although it's got a lot of the same information, I think the good thing about having another book on the same subject is that you get a sort of different points of view on that as well, and you can sort of take out of each of those books what's more relevant to your situation.
Yeah.
And this one's the Practical Self-Sufficiency book, written by Dick and James Strawbridge, a father and son.
Okay, cool.
I believe they're from Victoria, I think. But they have their own property, which they're basically self-sufficient on, and this book was really great to go through. And one other book, which I've just picked up, it's The Complete Guide to Saving Seeds. This book, obviously, if you're growing your own food and you want to become truly self-sufficient, being able to grow and save your own seed basically ensures that you have a continuous food supply without the need to go to a store to buy seeds or to buy seedlings. So
yeah, it's a valid point that we probably wouldn't think about as much because there is the availability to just go and get it. But yeah, if you wanted to be truly self-sufficient, that's something you definitely need to put into your agenda.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And I mean, there's other things as well. You know, when you buy a tomato plant, you can take the suckers and root them and grow from them to expand your plants. But the true self-sufficiency is saving your own seeds. And I've done it for a few things. Snow peas, which was successful, which was excellent. Saving my own snow peas and growing those.
And you're in the process of doing that now with your cauliflower.
That's right, yeah. And this book just has a lot of valuable information because obviously there's a few different ways that plants regrow themselves through their seeds, and knowing how that happens and how to best capture those seeds.
Yeah, because that can be the other difficult challenge is actually capturing the seeds.
Yeah, I mean, a good example of that is with the snow peas, if you just leave them on for a little bit longer and those snow peas have more time to form, and then just allowing them to dry in a area where there's no sunlight, they become quite hard, and then you can store them out of sunlight in a cool, dry place.
Okay.
Now, something that's quite different to that is saving tomato seeds. Now, tomato seeds have a gel coating on them when you, you know, pull them out of the tomato.
Yeah.
So you actually need to leave them in water for a while, and the water helps break down and remove that gel coating a bit before you then transfer them to paper towel or something to dry out of the sunlight as well. So.
Interesting.
So yeah, hopefully those books, and there's a whole range of others. I've got plenty of other books, but I think a good baseline is to have at least one region relevant book.
Yeah.
So an Australia and New Zealand self-sufficiency manual. The seed saving one's not too big of an issue because I believe capturing the seeds from different plants, so it doesn't matter where you are in the world, tomato seed requires the same treatment. So.
Sure.
So yeah, definitely grab those books and then you get some valuable information out of those. But then I guess moving on to then assessing your own land and assessing what steps to take. Now, there's a few, I think, key things to capture this off. Number one is water. I think to become truly self-sufficient, the first thing you need to do is assess where you're getting your water from.
Yeah.
If you're relying on town water, then you're pretty much tied to the grid.
Yeah.
So I think the first thing you need to look at is what catchments are available or whether or not a well or a bore water is available. Do you have a spring or creek running through your property? In most urban situations, this isn't viable, but bore water or I think at the very least, looking at your catchments, the roof of your house, sheds, etc., garage.
Yeah.
And capturing those rainwater.
Even if you're in a unit or something like that, but you've got a balcony that a downpipe's running down, you might be able to put in a diverter system just to fill like a barrel, like you've got a rainwater barrel.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't have to have massive rainwater tanks, just if you can catch some or something.
Well, that's the thing too. I mean, even on a balcony, if you can put what two or even three barrels, if you've got the space, depending on the size of your balcony, of course. Even though you yourself don't have very much space, the roof of the apartment block complex is huge and probably catching heaps of water. So
yeah,
there's probably a fairly good supply there. And as much as you can fit, you know, go for it.
Yeah.
I suppose the only thing with that is that the more barrels you have, the less growing space you have.
Yeah.
So you've got to find the right balance that works for you.
That's right.
But around a common urban yard, that's not a problem. And it can be something as simple as that same solution, I suppose.
Yeah, sure.
But if you've got a space available, then put in a big rainwater tank in.
Yeah, definitely.
The next one. Sourcing your own food.
Indeed.
So there's a couple of different ways we can do this. The first one is
through gardening, growing some veggies. Excuse me.
Yep, which is, you know, and you can do that from a single pot to a whole garden. Doesn't matter. So, looking at where your gardens are, I think is important as well, and knowing the direction of the sun. So, in the southern hemisphere, we prefer obviously north-facing garden beds. And by that I mean if your gardening area is on the south side of your house, then it's probably going to be, you know, not getting as much sunlight as the north side of the house.
Yeah. So
bearing that in mind when you're selecting, if you're going to be building new garden beds, just being a bit aware of where the north is and also just tracking the sun, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Because you could have big trees or, you know, obstructions.
Neighbor's house,
the houses. Yeah, that's right. That will shade certain areas regardless of whether it's facing north, south or where. So each person's own property is going to have different qualities.
Okay, and the next thing, obviously another food source is going to be livestock. So probably the simplest and easiest livestock for people in an urban situation is going to be chickens. You can have, you know, one or two chickens in a very small area. In fact, you can keep them in quite a small area. They don't need to have acres and acres of land. Now, that said, if you really don't have the space, you can keep them in a pen and feed them some good quality feed. And if you can let them out every now and then, that's great. Or if you can dedicate some more space to them so they can wander around the yard or even just free range around the entire yard is even better again. But even just having a couple of chickens is going to provide you with some lovely fresh eggs every day. And it just, I suppose the other thing too is it really makes you feel more like...
They're great to have around, yeah.
Yeah, it sort of completes the idea of becoming more self-sufficient, even if it's just a small contribution, whether it's only a couple of eggs.
And I love, you know, feeding them our veggie scraps and that from the kitchen too, because it's just a good cycle. You're eating the vegetables and, the waste isn't just going into the bin. I mean, composting is also a great thing to do with it, but something I really enjoy is those food scraps, and even if there's some bread that's got a bit old or something like that, just the chooks just love it, and it's to get the fresh eggs at the end of the day as well. It's just excellent.
Oh, a visitor on the cat. I wouldn't suggest using the cat as livestock.
No.
But I guess another thing to that point, we grow the vegetables, we eat the vegetables, the vegetable scraps go to the chickens, and the chickens produce eggs for you. The chickens also produce waste themselves.
Yep.
And if we use that waste and we compost that with straw or sugarcane mulch or something like that, or some sort of plant matter that composts down, then that goes back on the plants.
So yeah.
You really are creating that full cycle. So
it's fantastic, yeah.
Other sorts of livestock you can look at. Now, this is obviously going to be dependent on space, but if you have quite a lot of space, you can keep a couple of pigs.
Yeah.
Two at a minimum. They're social animals, so you can't just keep one on its own. You shouldn't. It's not really fair to them, so at least two. But I believe, and I wouldn't quote me on it, but from the research that I've done in Queensland, there's no licensing that's required to keep pigs on an urban property.
Okay. The only thing that may pull it up would be different councils, individual rulings, everyone would have to check their own shire for what the legalities are there.
Yeah. At the very least, if you do look down the pig avenue and do want to keep pigs, you have to let Biodiversity Queensland know so they can keep track of that sort of thing. Okay. And you do need to let them know when you move them. So
yeah,
when that includes when you're picking them up and taking them to the abattoir.
Yeah.
You could also look at a goat or goats if you've got somewhere where you don't mind getting damaged, but they can provide some lovely milk as well.
Yeah, and you could also have some lamb, lambs or sheep.
Yeah, I mean, all depending on the space.
Yeah.
And what commitment you have to them.
So. Yeah.
All right, the next sort of thing that I think, which flows on from that, and this particularly comes in to light more so at the end of summer when you've got bumper crops, is preserving that food.
Yeah.
So we take advantage of the heavy growing season through the warmer months, and preserving what you grow or the surplus that you have gives you a good stockpile in the larder to continue through the cooler months where it's less productive.
That's right, yeah. Yep. So you can't necessarily get through everything that you've grown.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good way to use it when things aren't as productive in the winter.
Yep. And then again, compost and waste. So whilst you're eating the vegetables you grow in and stuff like that, as we mentioned, you can feed some of that compost or waste material from the veggie patch back to the chooks or to any other livestock that you've got. And anything they don't eat, you can then compost to create good feed for your garden, or you could even look at building a worm farm, which is a good thing as well. Okay, so we've looked at water, we've looked at food and livestock through vegetables and animals, composting and preserving your foods. And I think another big thing with self-sufficiency, and this for me is something I'm starting to look into myself now that I've gotten to this point, is your power and electricity. This one, there's a number of options you can look at, but I think the first thing you want to look at is monitoring your power and looking at what in your house consumes the most power and what you can do to change your power usage into something that's a little bit more efficient.
Yeah, that's the go.
Mm-hmm. So a power monitor, wireless power monitor, you can get them from any good electronic store. Plug them in and turn on each device and have a look at your power load as it goes up and down and calculate what devices you have around the house that's consuming the most power. And then just looking at how you can utilize more efficient equipment, perhaps upgrading your appliances to more efficient equipment if that's something you can afford or something you need to do. And also, you know, get into good practices of turning things off. For instance, the television. If the television's turned off via the remote and remains in standby mode, it's still consuming power. But if you can get in the habit of
turning it off at the wall, yeah, that's correct.
Yep. Okay, the next step after that then is to look at alternative energy sources. So things like solar, wind, and even water, for that matter. You know, these are other good options. Something to note with solar power, if you get a company and you just install them, generally they just tie into the grid. And the way they work is they feed energy back into the grid, and you usually get paid a certain allowance for that, and that offsets your power usage. If you want to become truly self-sufficient, though, you need to get something like a battery bank.
Yeah.
And that's solar power, and then also you can look at things like wind turbines and things like that, which actually power up the energy bank, the battery bank. And you can, you know, through an inverter, use those on certain appliances and things like that as well. So
yeah.
The power debate really is, there's a lot of information, a lot to talk about, but I think just covering the basics, you know, is all we'll touch on tonight.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we could talk podcasts and podcasts and podcasts about those.
Yeah, there's a lot of different options there. I mean, you know, if you wanted to go to a full solar setup, you can have solar with battery banks, and then you can have a biodiesel generator for backup. Mm. I mean, you know, there's the options and the...
Yeah.
That go on.
There's even, you know, methane capture through animal waste and using that for gases. There's so many options out there. But then also, you know, your heating, you know, using wood, you know, wood stoves and then capturing heat from that to run through the house or, you know, even...
And also to heat water and cook on and all sorts of things.
Yeah, the lists of possibilities are endless. But I think the first thing to do is, out of all of these options of becoming a little more self-sufficient at home, is to consider all those options, and whatever excites you the most is probably the key point to start with.
That's right, yeah.
So for me, it was gardening. That was the first thing that I really wanted to get into, and that's what got me onto the path of this lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then through research and learning and, you know, even enjoying shows by Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall and people like that, I was exposed to the other elements of self-sufficiency, and therefore my excitement towards those elements grew just through becoming more proactive in this sort of lifestyle and then following those up as I went along.
Yeah, no, that's the go.
All right, so I think hopefully we've given you some good points to think about. And, of course, if you have any questions or want us to touch further on any of these subjects, hit us up at our email. You can email info@theurbanfarmers.tv and... I'll pick up on that and I can respond to you and we can maybe have a chat about it next time, or even if it's just if you want some links of some popular websites that we look at or anything like that, don't hesitate to contact the show and we'll get back to you.
Sounds good.
With that, we'll close out the show. Thanks very much for listening to us, and until next time, go and get your hands dirty.
See you later.